Kevin Osteen. And joining me again on V8 Radio is our co-host, as always, Mr. Mike Cueball Clark. What's the good word, my man?
The good word is we're still got some good weather out there, some cruising, and having a good time. How's it going with you?
This summer has just flown by.
Oh, boy.
It's been crazy. I've been delinquent on updating a lot of stuff and doing a lot of things, and I feel like we should have been doing this podcast, you know, a month ago, but yeah. I apologize. Balls to the wall, as they say, in the steam locomotive industry. So, we have a lot going on our end. Is there any update on the GTO?
Well, I talked to my machinist, and his big holdup right now is pistons, because they had to special order them because they have to have a dish put in them, and it's not a standard dish. It's like a 22cc dish, and it's nothing that you can get off the shelf, so they have to be made. And when I called him, he said that typically they'll wait until they have so many orders before they send things out, so... Who knows when that's going to be? I'm going to call him again in the next couple of days just to get another update, or might stop by his shop and see what's going on. But
is it
my
something they can cut.
The machinist can cut. I'm not sure. I think he wanted to get them manufactured, you know, to his specs. So
sure.
So that's kind of where we are. So I can't. I mean, I still have to bring parts to him. I got to get him my timing set and the rest of the engine parts to put together. But he wants me to hold off until he has those pistons, so he gets the short block put together, and then we'll start yanking and banking from there. But I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope to have this thing back on the road before the snow falls. So I'll tell you that. So.
That was kind of like the only parameter.
I know. But no, I don't even get that. So.
I feel your pain, and I understand full well waiting for parts and waiting for stuff to happen that's beyond your control, and you sit there and it's like, oh man,
yeah,
you know, many times when we're building a car for a customer, you know, we've got a 66 Chevelle in the shop right now, and it took like 8 weeks to get one piece of sheet metal that was pivotal to put the car back together.
Oh, you know? Brother. And so there it is, just in total disarray before that one part comes in.
Yeah, and then you start going, well, geez, you know, I can make this, you know, by hand. It'll be 10 times the cost of buying one.
Right.
So you don't do it, and you go, well, maybe it'll be here tomorrow. And then next thing you know, you gladly would have paid the 10 times the cost
right.
further down the road, you know, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time budgets. Ugh.
But at least the stuff is available. That's the saving grace. You know?
Yeah.
You wait a little bit, but you'll get it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's so fantastic how the aftermarket really steps up to let this hobby keep living and growing, for crying out loud. I mean, on my block alone, there's three people with cool cars that they drive around, excluding yeah. me. But
you'll be back.
Yeah, one of these
won't
days.
Be long.
Yeah. So... yeah, but I mean, if you need something, you can typically order it through a catalog, and it's great. It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah, just it is. You know, just the other day, I got a supplemental catalog from, I don't know if it was Summit, I think it was Summit, with a whole bunch of new brands of people that I've never even heard of.
Really,
that they're selling parts on. Yeah, I mean, so like you're saying, there's new stuff coming all the time, which is killer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you see a lot of really cool stuff when you go to SEMA every year. There's got to be tons of vendors maybe that you haven't seen before, and you know, people come up with new ideas and new ways to do things, and it's got to be mind-blowing.
There is, and what people don't know or don't normally consider about SEMA is that the layout of the show floor is kind of dictated by seniority, you know, so the people that are on the main floor have been there forever.
I see.
Or somebody else has dropped out and a space has opened and mm-hmm. somebody has moved into that spot. So the new stuff is generally kind of in the perimeter fringe, because these are newer companies, first time displayers, that kind of stuff. And they don't get to be in the main center of the main floor. And it's hard to go through all the halls and all of the displays even if you go all 4 days of the show, you still can't see everything. Huh. So it's kind of hard to see like all the cool new stuff from brand new companies and first time displayers, just the way they kind of lay it out. Now, recently, that's been kind of a gripe. You know, there's been companies who'd said, you know, look, I don't know if I'm going to be in business for 30 years to get the key spot on the main floor, you know.
Right.
So SEMA has been doing things to integrate new products in, you know, more trafficked parts of the halls and in the hallways and things like that, and doing new products displays and things like that. So it's just a lot to take in, though, definitely.
Sure, sure. I believe it. You guys just had your V8, your second annual V8 drive-in out there, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that went really cool. One of these days, next year, you'll have to come out.
You know what? I'm gonna make sure I do that because I'm sick and tired of missing that. It looks like such a cool time. So
it's so simple. It's such a basic, kind of dumb little thing, and that's I think what makes it fun.
Yeah.
Because it's a Thursday night at the drive-in, and the reason why it's a Thursday night is because the drive-in has to show real movies on the weekend to keep the studios happy and,
right,
you know, keep themselves in business.
Sure.
But the rest of the week you can rent them out, you know, and we're lucky to have a drive-in locally that's actually functioning.
Yeah, you really are. Oh my God. They're dropping like flies.
Right. Totally. They, you know, 'cause normally they don't make any money and nobody cares anymore. So for me, it was a concept that I always wanted to do, because whenever you go, if you go Google drive-in right now, a picture will come up of a drive-in from the 50s and it'll have a bunch of classic cars. And I thought, that's cool. That's what everybody thinks a drive-in is.
Right.
But if you're lucky enough to go to one that's still functioning, you go to a drive-in on a Saturday night and it's a cool experience, but it's a bunch of Hyundais and Hondas and, you know, newer daily driver car, so it doesn't quite have that same experience that it used to. So right. I thought, well, you know, why don't we do something where we can throw like a car show and show a car film? So we approached our local drive-in, and the guy's like, okay. And he's, you know, he told me, he's like, I like the idea. He has a classic car night, you know, once or twice a year, but we thought, let's just make this nothing but, you know. And so we rented the place out, and luckily with the help of some decent companies that think it's a cool idea, they help share the expense, because it's not a cheap thing to rent out a drive-in on a Thursday night.
I didn't even think about that. I'm sure it's not.
No, it's not. It's more than I got laying around, you know, just to have my friends over, basically.
Right.
But it was something that, you know, 10 or so companies throw in a few $100, next thing you know, you got a party, you know.
Sweet.
And we had... Our attendance is growing. I think we had closer to 240 or 250 cars this year, something like that. Hmm. And with the threat of a tremendous storm, so a lot of people got scared away because of the storm, because, again, you don't want to drive your hot rod or your whatever in a big hailstorm. But it turned out to be kind of neat, because we showed Bullet on the big screen with the Mustang and Charger racing around.
Yeah.
And off in the distance, behind the screen, the skies were all flashing with lightning. So
oh, that's killer.
Kind of a double show.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds outstanding.
Yeah, it was neat, you know, and it wasn't super hot. And Gateway Classic Cars, which now they're a classic car dealer that's got 14 dealerships around the country. It's pretty unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
Over the past year, they've had their customers come to them, and they say, hey, you guys should be at the drive-in. So they called us, you know, and we said, sure. So they helped sponsor it and bring it together, and that was all cool.
That's great.
And we're actually thinking about doing two of them next year, a spring
all
and a
right.
fall. Yeah.
All right. I'm in for that.
Because you know me, I don't know when to say when.
Well, why should you?
Yeah, right.
If some is good, then more is better. So let's keep doing it.
That's right. Yeah. So we have the in the off season, when we're not promoting the next event, if you go to the driveincruise.com website, you can see all the pictures and stuff. And it was cool. Got some killer drone video this year. Guy flying around with the drone shooting stuff. Two guys were droning.
Oh, cool.
Taking video and photos. Yeah. Yeah. It was, and that was a wild thing, because I had a guy call me after the drive-in, and he said, yeah, you know, I was at your drive-in event the other night, and this is a guy who I'd never met before in person. And I said, what did you drive? And he goes, well, I had this I had this Nova, you know, and it was kind of parked over on the side. So I pulled up the drone footage, and I'm like, oh, yeah, here you are. I see, you know, I'm flying over them. It was pretty wild.
Oh, cool.
Huh. Yeah.
That's good stuff, man.
Yeah, it was cool. So we'll have another contest about what the movie should be for the next one.
Okay. All right.
Because, you know, so far we had the Pontiac guys taken care of with Smokey and the Bandit at the first one.
Yeah.
And then this was the Mustang and Charger with Bullet. So we'll see. I don't know. What do you want to see?
Maybe Vanishing Point. That would be a good one.
That would be a good one. I'm not 100% sure that Vanishing Point is family friendly.
Okay. Yeah, you got a good point there. Well, definitely not Corvette Summer like I posted before. Good Lord.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe Dirty Mary Crazy Larry is a possibility.
That's a good one. Thunderbolt and Lightfoot might be good.
Yeah, right. Hadn't thought about that. That'd be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
People always say, you know, American Graffiti. You got to show American Graffiti. And it's a great film, but it's very dialogue heavy.
Yeah.
And watching people talk, you know, to me, I thought one of the attractions of Bullet was when they were cruising through and doing the car chase scene on that giant screen. I mean, you darn near got sick, you know, which I thought was pretty neat. So I was trying to go for high action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, when you look at it, Bullet is 10 minutes of high action and the other hour and a half are nothing.
Right. Yeah, well, there's that. man. Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's a few good movies out there. I got to really put my thinking cap on and try to come up with something.
Well, we'll do another thing on the website and on the Facebook page to have people chime in, because I'm all about what everybody else wants. You know, it's my little fantasy just to be able to do this. So whatever anybody wants to see, if enough people think it's cool, we'll do it.
Yeah, cool. Hollywood Nights is a pretty good one too, but that's not very family friendly either.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we did have a decent amount of kids, and the drive-in. It's funny, you know, they have the playground and everything, and kids were using that. You know, it's like it's full on Americana. You know.
Sure. I wonder how many people stuff people in the trunk coming through just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we made it cheap enough, you know, at $10 for a carload, you know, that nobody really felt the pinch to have to do that, you know, but I still wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that you have to do it at this point. It's that you want to do it.
Yeah, I think most people today are like, can I get out if I get
Yeah, there's that. Hopefully there's no holes in the trunk and it gets full of exhaust or anything. Ugh.
Yeah, right.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, we're not quite done with this car season yet. We got McCacken coming up here in November, which is...
There's still a lot of stuff going on. I mean, Hot Rods Drag Week is happening right now.
That's right. It is happening right now. I was watching some live feed on that the other day at the driver's meeting. That's something else. That's a heck of a production they got going on over there.
It's insane. It's something that when we, I remember being in some of the initial meetings when I was still back at Hot Rod with Freiberger and Rob Canaan and a couple other guys talking about the Drag Week concept, and we're all thinking, who the heck is going to do that? You know, because the precursor, in a way, was the One Lap of America, which was you would drive to a different road racetrack in a different state, and then you'd have to run the course and then drive to the next road racetrack.
Right.
And a road race, in many ways, is much harder on a car than a drag race.
Sure.
Until you get to the level that they're running at today. You know, these guys are running 6-second cars, it blows my mind.
Those Unlimiteds are unbelievable. How they survive the street, just the drive between tracks, drop a 6-second quarter mile time, drive to the next track for a week. Unreal.
It is. It's mind bending because, you know, I'm going to say 10 years ago, you didn't even have, you know, 6-second cars barely at the track. And now they're, like you're saying, they're laying down in some cases. I think the longest stretch was 1,200 miles at one point.
Jeez.
You know, total anyway, that they had to drive.
I remember here to put it in perspective, when I was in high school, and I was a senior in 1987, I went to the inaugural season at the Texas Motorplex. This is when I used to live in Texas. And I watched Daryl Gwynn in the Top Fuel Dragster lay down like a 527 ET. And that set a world record at like 273 miles an hour. And, I mean, compare that to today where you got a guy driving a streetcar going 6 seconds, for Pete's sake. It's just
exactly. Top Fuel, I mean, shortly after, I think, in what, 88, Eddie Hill laid down the first sub-5 second, you know, at 288 miles an hour, something like that. And we're only, you know, a second and a half away from that now.
Yeah.
And a quarter on a street-driven car.
On a streetcar. Yeah. I mean, the technology that goes into that is just mind-boggling.
Yeah. Well, and a big part of this has to go to Rick Johnson and the team at Gear Vendors for making an overdrive unit that'll live behind several thousand horsepower.
Yeah.
That's the key to keeping these cars together on the street, is gearing them so that they spin low enough to basically idle going down the street between, you know, races.
Yeah.
So that they don't bend all the valve springs and break everything.
No kidding. Yeah, so that is something else. It never ceases to amaze me how all that happens. It's just, it's crazy.
That's a special breed that wants to do that event.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it would be cool to go through it, you know, just in a really low end class, like a, you know, a pure street class, or maybe just some kind of modifier, just to have
a
the
low
experience
class, like myself.
It. What's that?
Yeah. A low class, much like myself.
Exactly, much like myself. I feel you, brother.
Yeah, right. You know what? It's funny, though. When I drive to the racetrack, I'm scared enough to drive there in whatever I'm driving and lay down a pass and just make it home.
Yeah.
You know, without trying to compete or lean on it too hard or anything. So, yeah, that's... Pitch a trailer to it and let's go to, you know, six or seven more towns.
Yeah, no support vehicles allowed. I mean, you got to just run what you brung. I mean, you have your trailer, but no support vehicle. That's,
right.
That's really putting yourself out there.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to combine that with a drive-in somehow. You know?
Yeah. I got to figure that one out.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, but there is still a whole bunch of events. There's some cool, I know, by me in the Heartland down here near St. Louis, there's some charity car shows and some, you know, more local kind of stuff going on,
right,
you know, all the way through the end of October, easily. And then, yeah, McCacken is right around the corner, and we're getting excited about that. You and I had discussed a little bit about the possibility of Bobby Unser being there with that Pikes Peak 69 Torino.
Right.
And that's been locked.
Oh, good.
The car is going to be there, and Mr. Unser is going to be there. And the craziest thing happened to me yesterday.
Tell me.
I got a phone call from Bobby Unser, for crying out loud.
Get out of here.
Yeah, the phone rings, and this guy says, yeah, can I talk to Kevin, please? And I said, yeah, this is Kevin. He's like, yeah, this is Bobby Unser. And I'm like, holy cats.
Holy cow.
You know, here's a three-time Indy 500 champion and a guy that won the Pikes Peak Hill Climb 13 times in his career, setting records in most of them, is calling my happy ass.
Jeez. Well, you can't say wrong number because he already knew your name.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So it was neat. It was a tremendous honor to be able to spend. Hey, I mean, we're on the phone for about a half an hour. He's a great guy. He's just a brilliant mind, and remembers the 69 event like it was yesterday, and knows all about the car and the story behind the car. And it is something else. I'm telling you, when we do this interview and we publish this thing on VATV and on Muscle Car of the Week, it's definitely going to be worth seeing because it is, it's super cool. And what is so neat about it, sure, the car and the race is all cool stuff, but the way that all went down back then would never happen again today. We live in a world that is far too corporate, and there's too many people that got to sign off on stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the way this particular car came together was purely based on one guy's ability and one guy's drive and one guy's relationships and his willingness to pick up the phone. And next thing you know, you got Bunky Knudsen, who was president of Ford at the time, partnering up with Bobby Unser and Smokey Unick and Bill Stropp. and let's go win a let's go set a record, you know, and they did.
There's a purity there that you just don't get anymore. That's for sure.
Totally, totally. So that is definitely something to look forward to.
Very cool. Speaking of Pike's Peak, I just was out on vacation with the family out in Colorado, and we went to the top of Pike's Peak, and I don't know how those cats race up there. Holy cow, that's high.
Yeah, well, I think it's about a 6,000 feet elevation change from the base of the race to the top.
Yeah.
And back then it was all gravel roads, and today it's obviously not. But yeah, having just been there, I mean, you know what it's like living on the edge, literally.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean it's that mountain's 14,000 feet above sea level, and it's you feel it up there. And it's just we took this cog train up there, and that's pretty much my speed there, the cog train.
Yeah, <right. laughs>
And my wife wouldn't let me drive.
Yeah, well, she
had a
death grip
on the handle, that's for sure.
She's a wise woman.
She is a wise woman. But yeah, as you're going up that cog train, you can see the part of the roadway and some of these really tight hairpin turns. And the guy, the announcer, the conductor, said that the current world record holder for the Pikes Peak race took this hairpin at 85 miles an hour, and it just doesn't look possible. I mean, how can this guy do that? And there's no guardrail at that point.
No, yeah.
Oh my God! I don't know how more people don't die on that race.
It's a dangerous race. And did they happen to say what the current world record time is? Do you remember?
I'm thinking like 11 minutes or something like that.
I think it's far less than that.
Is it? Oh, then I'm thinking of something totally different then.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's not much to go, you know, quite a distance, especially up that high on that crazy of a surface.
But yeah, that's another race. I'd like to go witness that race one of these days too. That would be something definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah, without a doubt, definitely. Well, and kind of getting back to McCacken, and you and I were talking about the idea of doing one of these podcasts from the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in
right.
Chicago. So we'll throw it out there right now. Anybody listening, you get a chance to meet Cue Ball himself in person at the McCacken show.
The man, the myth,
with
the legend.
VA Radio. Yeah, we're gonna have to get you a shirt for that one. Definitely, we've got to get some VA Radio shirts made and make even more semi-official.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, you remember when we did the podcast at the CarCraft Summer Nationals? You're talking about that 66 Belvedere that Rad Rides by Troy built. I was just reading a story about it was featured in Hot Rod recently about his 200 mile an hour try, the owner of the car, and it's quite an odyssey this guy went through to get there.
Well, any 200 mile an hour attempt is going to be an odyssey.
Yeah, and especially on a brick like that.
That one's on Drag Week right now, as a matter of fact.
Is it really?
Yeah, he built that for Bonneville for Drag Week, and basically to do power tour when it's all said and done. Something that's docile enough to just drive. Geez. You know,
that's a triple threat. I love it.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. So there's been a whole bunch of other stuff that has kind of happened. That first Cobra, the CSX 2000 car sold.
Right.
And, you had the high guess of all people on
of
the
all
website.
People. I swear, folks, it wasn't fixed. That was an honest guess.
There's no way it could have been, you know.
It's, yeah.
I think at the end of the day, it was $13.5 million, somewhere around there.
Yeah, that's outrageous. I mean,
and it went to the Miller family, who owns or owned anyway the Miller Motorsports Park in Utah, and they have an extensive Shelby collection of GT40s and other Cobras and cool stuff. So it went to the right place, without a doubt.
They need to have that over at McCacken, for Pete's sake. I hope it shows up there.
You know, that really wouldn't be a bad idea, and maybe we should ask Mr. Ashton if. Him and Colin Comer is kind of the Ford Of the members that run the McCacken organization, Comer's more of the Ford and Shelby guy. Maybe we can lean on him because I'm sure he knows Miller.
Yeah, probably.
That'd be pretty wild.
It would be wild. Yeah, there's a. Yeah. I think there's going to be like a big Shelby Expo there this year. I mean, there's Shelby's there every year, pretty much though. But.
For a car mark that doesn't have that many that were made, they keep finding unique versions and different ones, you know, that have been out of the public eye, which is pretty incredible if you think about it.
It really is.
Come up with stuff that's never been seen.
Yeah, I don't know how he does that, but by golly, he keeps doing it.
Oh, yeah. As far as putting the displays together and the invitationals and the theme and to be able to top every year with something else, it's hats off to him. I mean, those guys, they got it going on.
Yeah. He really outdid himself with that convertible Hemi Challenger display that they had last year. That was really impressive. Really impressive.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I had another interesting Cobra story. One of the cars that we shot for Muscle Car of the Week was a 64 289 Cobra. And we had shot... It's very rare that we don't get everything we set out to get when we go shoot Muscle Car of the Week. But for whatever reason, in this particular example, I know the last time we shot, we fought some rain and a few things. So there was a handful of exterior shots of the car that we did not get. So... we came back, and I put on the list that the next time we go to shoot Muscle Car of the Week, we need to grab that Cobra for a few minutes and finish off shooting the video on it so we can complete our package. Uh-huh. Well, it turns out that as soon as we left the shoot we did earlier this spring, that car went out for restoration, and now it's a different color.
Oh, God dang it!
So I believe it was red when we shot it, and now it's green. And
I think
it's probably back, knowing those guys, it's back to its correct born with color. So I'm thinking that'll probably be part of the story, though. I think we'll show it in both colors, you know, and just kind of say that the life story of this car has changed halfway through our production, and now it's green.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think that works.
Yeah. I mean, it's what happened.
Yeah. Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so. I got some hate mail today. Speaking of Muscle Car of the Week, a guy lit me up about doing burnouts. And it's funny because when we first started doing that show, we didn't touch the cars. We didn't really start them, you know, because a lot of these are priceless cars. I don't want to mess them up or anything, you know. And somebody online said, hey, why don't you drive them around, you know, and do burnouts or whatever. And I lightly approached that with the brothers who own the collection. And they said, yeah, sure. You know, they're just cars. That's what they're for. You know, when they were new, people drag raced them and did burnouts, whatever.
Right.
Go have fun. So that's how that all started. You know, it was kind of by request. And today some guy sent a nice comment saying, you know, the whole burnout thing is irresponsible and childish, and it's hard on the driveline and shouldn't be done. And it's, you know, I agree to a certain extent, but then part of me says, that's what that car was doing when it was new.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, of course it's childish. Absolutely. What's your point?
So is this whole thing.
Yeah. We want to relive our youth, for Pete's sake. Yeah, we're going to burn out. Gee whiz.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the funny thing is because the car he was talking about was our 150th episode, which was that Yanko Deuce Nova. And we did a big slow motion monster burnout on that one. And that car was legitimately raced its whole life. I mean, the people that bought it knew, you know, were weekend warrior NHRA guys, and they would race that car. So, you know,
then that's what it's meant to do. If I want to be responsible, I'll drive a Civic, for Pete's sake.
That's right. I'll watch Economy Car of the Week.
Yeah. Exactly. Economy Car of the Week.
Big following on that show. Bigger than ours, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Bunch of old biddies like, oh, did you see that Prius? That sure was something.
You know, at 54 miles an hour, he'd get another 0.2 of a mile.
Exactly. Oh, we're going to hyper mile today, folks.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Oh, good Lord.
But it's funny when you mentioned that, you know, we do this to relive our youth. The other day I was thinking, because basically, if you look at it, I kind of live in the past, you know, because I'm always researching old cars and talking to people about restoring old cars. And, you know, the common thread is always the car that got away or the one I had in high school or the car I always wanted, you know, and I get that totally. I'm a victim of that nostalgia myself, as are you, you know, with the GTO.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, we do in our shop put new technology into cars, you know, that's cutting edge stuff, but it's still, you know, wrapped in an older envelope.
Right.
And I started to think, is this necessarily, you know, this concept of living in the past, is this a good thing or a bad thing? You know, is this healthy? Or is this, you know, a complete escape mechanism all the time from reality? Well, so I actually looked it up.
Oh.
And there was actually a Harvard study done recently where they had some psychologists that analyzed the positive and negative effects of nostalgia. And it was pretty interesting what they found. Their conclusions were that people become nostalgic, they're triggered by nostalgia when they're having a struggle or a hard time because it's comfortable to think back about a better time.
Okay.
And I'm not really in a position in my life where I'm, you know, struggling to escape a tragedy or something. You know,
right.
Of course, we all have work stress and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they said what happens is when you... Of course, you know, we always think history is better than it really was, you know, hindsight.
Right.
But they found that people that visit the past or music from the past or the positive moments are more optimistic than people that don't revisit that stuff. And not only about the past, about future endeavors as well, because... If you think back and say, oh, yeah, this 70 Buick I got here, I had great times in my old one. It was a lot of fun, you know. Okay,
yeah.
So what are we doing today?
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's a mindset that brings out optimism about how you're dealing with the present time. So I thought, hey, well, you know what? Then that justifies all of my nonsense playing with old cars.
Totally. Totally. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, thank
you. There's an optimistic way to look at it.
Yeah. I am... By nature, an optimistic person. I'm a glass half full kind of person, and I look forward to things. And you know, I like people. I like to engage with people, and generally have a pretty good outlook on things. Yeah, there's stresses at work and stresses with life and things that get you down. But you know, generally, I've always been a happy person. And in looking back at my youth and the cars I used to play around with and the car I have now, makes me even happier. So I totally agree with all that.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Very
you
cool.
know, I don't really I'm not really nostalgic for the, you know, the really times it sucked. So but I don't think anybody does, you know. They
no.
don't go, oh boy, I really wish I was you know,
yeah, digging a ditch again because I had to.
Yeah, right, laid up with a blown out back, you know. That was fun for that 3 days or whatever.
Oh, jeez.
There's a line in a John Hyatt song. I don't know if you're a big John Hyatt fan, but there's a song called Stolen Moments, which is about we're all living in stolen moments, you know, because the time is here and then it goes, so you better enjoy this moment right now. And one of the lines in that is that he doesn't look forward to looking back. So he's not, you know, the concept there is that 20 years from now, you know, is he going to be looking back at this moment as being the good times? If it,
yeah.
You know, it might suck 20 years from now. So he's not looking forward to looking back. So he's trying to live in the moment, you know, and that's pretty deep stuff there from Hyatt. But.
Yeah. Pretty deep, man.
All I know is that this, you get behind the wheel of an old car and you get that smell and you're right back there, buddy.
Oh, boy, howdy. That's for sure. Yeah, if I need a blast of that, I go in the garage, I open the door in my GTO and stick my head in there and take a whiff. I'm like, okay, things are good.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They're good or they're bad.
Yeah, I love that old car smell.
Yeah, old car smell is definitely something you can't recreate. And I think old car and new car smell has changed over the years. Because if you think about what old or what new car smell is, it's basically, you know, a conglomeration of adhesives for the plastic and the seats and the seat foam and rubber and, you know, all the stuff that goes into making a car, the right. solvent remnants from the paint and everything.
Yeah.
And all that stuff is different today than what they used to use. So yeah. the older cars, old new car smell is different from new car smell. And I never forget my neighbor down the street in 1978 came home with a brand new 78 Oldsmobile Delta 88.
Nice.
It was silver with no vinyl top and a red gut, Olds 403 and the big old super stock style rally wheels on it. And it was a neat car. You know, it wasn't really a muscle car or something right. super fancy, but it was just a clean, tight car. And I think that was mm-hmm. the first brand new car I ever rode in. And
oh, wow.
I will never, never forget that smell. And can't find it today because what we have today doesn't smell like that.
Yeah, that's true. Huh.
New car smell is now environmentally friendly.
Yeah, that stinks.
New car stink.
Yeah, that's no good. Give me that old car dangerous smell.
Yeah, with ozone depleting solvents and glues.
Some carcinogenic outgassing, for Pete's sake. That's what I need.
Yeah, right. Well, that basically describes this 70 RIV that I bought as far as how it smelled. Carcinogenic outgassing is probably pretty close. It had a whole bunch of deposits that were made by mice and other stuff. And it's like the more I cleaned out of this thing, the more I found. And there's a tech tip that I will share. I ended up taking everything out of the trunk of this car. I still, to this day, have not pulled the carpet yet because I'm getting closer to getting all the smell out, and I just didn't want to disturb it. But in the trunk of the car, I took the cardboard stuff out of the sides and the mat and all that stuff and removed it, and then just brewed up a big mix of, like, Pine Sol and water, and I have this foam gun that attaches to the garden hose.
Yeah.
Foam the whole thing and just let it sit out in the sun. I took the two quarter panel plugs out of the bottom of the quarters so that it would all drain out of there.
Oh, nice.
And soaked it for about an hour and just kind of kept adding to it, you know. And finally, the back half of the car, you know, it smells like you just cleaned the house.
All right.
Yeah. Lemon fresh.
Lemon fresh. That's perfect.
Which is it's better than being a fresh lemon, I guess, when you're talking about cars.
Yeah. You've been driving that RIV?
I have. I'm up to, I'm just shy of 30,000 miles on this thing. I bought it with 24.5.
Good
so I put
Lord.
Almost 6,000 miles on this car. And it's doing good. There's things I still have to do to it, you know, to make a few improvements. I'm going to up the front sway bar and it's got the big aluminum drum brakes. I'll, you know, eventually put discs on it and a few things. And
cool.
I'm halfway through an audio install at this point.
All right.
But it's getting there.
You're going to hydro boost it?
Most definitely at some point.
All right.
If I do the disc brakes, I will most likely do the hydro boost. You know what I'm enthusiastic about right now is this car, it's not rusty, but it's got some surface rust underneath, like many old cars, but there's no holes in it or anything.
Right.
And I stumbled across a process online, and it's a product that I can't remember the name of, because I'm good like that. Mm-hmm. They call it the safest rust remover, and I believe it's a water-based chemical. I know there's another one called, I think it's called Rust Solve.
Evaporust, maybe?
Evaporust is another one. Yeah, there's like three that are very similar. Yeah, okay. Evaporust is another one. Have you seen when they have done this treatment with the garden hose and the shower head and the kiddie pool?
Was that like CLR that they did that with?
What they end up doing is with any of these evaporust type chemicals is you get an old car, right? You jack the thing up. And you get a cheap sump pump from your local Sears. and a piece of garden hose and a just a basic shower head and put the shower head on the garden hose, okay? And then you dump a bunch of this mixture into a kiddie pool and you put it below the car. And say, for example, you're going to, you know, you got surface rust on the rear end and on the wheel tub area, right?
Sure.
You do a test run with straight water to see where the flow is going to be as you sprinkle that area with your pump and garden hose rig.
Oh.
And if you set up this kiddie pool so that everything runs off the car and falls back in the pool, and you can recycle it and keep spraying it.
I'll be darned.
And when you actually go for the rust converting or rust remove, it's a removing chemical.
Right.
You flip the switch and you go away and you come back 24 hours later. You let this thing just drizzle itself and run and run and run. And the pictures I've seen and some of the videos I've seen are incredible, because when you come back, anywhere that had rust is bare steel, like clean, but it's not like sandblasted with a texture. It's like, some things are actually shiny, and that's paint is still there. So, you know, you can do about a 2-foot section or 3-foot section at a time, you know, unless you want to rig up some giant funnel type system with tarps or something to get, you know, to reclaim your chemical.
Uh-huh.
And then you run it back in the pool. And then, you know, when you're happy with one section, you slide your rig down and you clamp your hose up and let it go on the next couple of feet. And, once you're done, you've got all the surface rust is gone from the bottom of the car, and then you can, you know, further strip the remaining paint, you know, with a sander or something,
right.
Or you can just epoxy it or paint it or undercoat or do whatever you want. So I'm very intrigued by this, and I think I'm gonna put the RIV up as a guinea pig to try some of the parts first and see how it does.
All right.
But the neat thing is guys that have cars like this one that are low mile, unrestored, you know, cars that they don't want to necessarily take apart. They don't want to do a full resto. They just want to kind of preserve it.
Right.
That's a really cool way to go, because you don't have to disassemble everything. You're not disturbing anything. You know, you're just rinsing off what's there.
That is a cool way to go. You need to make a VATV video on that and show the rest of the world that thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. It's just a matter of coordinating. And I guess we're getting towards the end of the summertime, so maybe kiddie pools will be easier to get.
Yeah, maybe.
Go ask my neighbors.
Clearance.
Yeah. Hey, are you done with that? I need a bunch of kiddie pools for my garage.
No doubt. Oh, man. So what other cool projects you have going on at the shop?
Oh, lots of stuff. The Comp Cams Camaro is finished and is going home to those guys on Friday, which is a couple days from today as we record this. And that thing is an animal. Holy cats.
I thought that was done already.
It was done. Yeah. It made its debut in public and everything else. Yeah. And in typical fashion, anytime you quote-unquote finish a car, you know, until it's been driven several hundred miles and it's all sorted out, you know,
right.
It's not truly finished in our mind. So at the end of June, we showed it publicly at a couple of events. And it was a running, driving car then. But we still didn't have, you know, the miles logged on it that we really wanted to. And we modified a few things and chased a couple of noises and just did, you know, new car kind of fixes.
Sure.
But we did our final video feature shoot on that one yesterday and photography. And again, we're using some drone footage on that, which is pretty cool. And a lot of cool driving stuff. But this thing, Butler claimed 692 horsepower on motor at about 6,600 RPM, I believe. And I believe every word of that.
Really? Oh, brother.
Because you drive it around and it's nice and mellow. It's at 6X automatic six-speed, and it's got a lot of gears. It shifts a lot, you know, going up and down.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter where you are, what speed, you put your foot down, and it'll downshift sometimes two and three times, and just burn the tires forever. I mean, there's no hooking it up. So it's a lot of fun. And the crazy thing about it is it looks like an ice cream cone. You know, it's just a white convertible. It doesn't look threatening. You know, it's not menacing in any way. It's very family friendly until you lay on it. So that was cool.
That sounds cool.
So that one's finished. We have several other Camaros in the shop as usual. They kind of seem to gravitate to us. That 66 Ford 7-liter project is about to go out the door as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, finally. That's another very cool car. You'll see some video and photos on that one on the website and on the TV show.
That is a cool car.
We're getting ready to start a Nomad, a 57 Nomad. I don't know if we told you about that one.
No, dig it.
Very clean car, came out of Nevada. It's a rust-free car that has a recent cosmetic restoration. It's got a 383 small block in it and a few tricks. But we're going to ditch all that and change the color from red to black. And we've got an LSA, supercharged LS takeout motor from a 2013 Camaro ZL1 going in that one with a 6-speed.
That should move out.
Yeah, that'll be a fun car. Talked to a guy the other day about doing, I don't know if you know anything about these cars, but I think they call it a GTO.
I might have heard of one.
In fact, the gentleman that we met at the drive-in, and he owns an engine building shop. In fact, it's called New Century Performance. They do these mega-inch aluminum big block engines for race cars, 630-inch, all aluminum tall deck race motors. And he had just stumbled across a 64 GTO and is looking for a stock restoration appearance with a few tricks under the hood, a few tricks in the suspension. So we're talking about doing that one. It's not locked in yet, but it's just I figured you'd dig that, you know.
I dig that. I'm all about it.
Yeah. The we've been publishing the videos on the Thunder's Truck series. That one's finished and doing well. I don't know. We got 19 cars in the shop right now. I
mean, Gee whiz.
It's crazy. Yeah.
How does Kelly keep it straight?
I have no idea, man. because it's 19 cars, and then it's also the 15 guys in the shop working on them, and then all the customers associated with them, and then, you know, new people that are calling and stuff. So we're lucky to have developed a pretty neat cloud-based system that is our contact and customer management, which allows us to keep everything sorted out, you know, and try and stay on top of stuff. So
that's key. That is key, staying organized so it doesn't descend into chaos.
Yes, because it could. Could very easily. There's a few others that, some car ideas that I have this running list. You know, we all have that list of stuff we'd love to see or love to do. And last weekend, Kelly and I flew to my mom's house in Scottsdale for the weekend. And on the plane, for whatever reason, I had kind of a creative outburst and thought of probably three or four more that I would just love to build. Of course, it would involve finding the right, you know, the right customer. But see if you dig this one, all right? So basically a 70 Monte Carlo. Nobody plays with Monte Carlos. I don't know why. They're great cars.
They are great cars.
Yeah. My buddy had an LS5 SS 454 Monte Carlo triple black car a long time ago, and I really liked that car. Yeah, and I the one thing that always bothered me about the Monte Carlos is that the two-headlight front end didn't look as good as a 70 Chevelle with the four-headlight front end. It's just a personal thing. So the concept, we would actually call this one the Monte Carlo, you know, because this car would be so money if we got this right.
The Monte Carlo, I love it.
That's right. And the idea would be to do the headlight bezels and the nose basically off the 70 Chevelle to give it a little bit of, you know, and a functioning cowl hood, you know, like the 70 Chevelle had with the flapper at the, you know, base of the windshield.
Yeah.
And then do the car in black, just lower it. The wheels that are on the Comp Cams Camaro, it's a CCW wheel. It's got a really big fork-looking spoke that I just love. And I think they would go perfect on that car. You know, just do it in black. Maybe do an LSA, again, a supercharged, you know, LS motor with a red cover and the black. and you know, like a red big caliper. And those cars have a four link in them from the factory, you know, like your GTO. So they got a pretty decent rear suspension. Maybe just beef that up a little bit, and then do the inside stock. Just wrap it in leather. You know, do a French stitch leather cover on the stock dash. You know, pad, and maybe do a Chevelle console in one, but wrap that in leather, and just make it an upscale. You know, an upscale car. And it wouldn't take much, and people wouldn't know what hit them. You know, I think it would just be so unique, you know.
That would be very attractive. I like that idea, that leather-wrapped French stitch stuff. That's really nice.
Yeah, so.
That sounds so damn money, man.
Doesn't it? Half the battle is a name on these silly cars.
My old man had a 71 Monte Carlo when we were little kids.
Oh, did he really?
It was orange, like Hugger orange with a black interior. It was...
Oh, cool, yeah.
Was my favorite. Next, it was GTO. It was my favorite. My brother and I used to ride up on the rear package tray when he'd drive us around. That's how little we were when he had that car.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good memories.
Yeah, well, my buddy Jim did a full-on restoration on his 70, the black one that I was mentioning before. Mm-hmm. And he did this, I don't know how, we were both early, I don't even think we were 21 yet. He was a couple years older than me. I was probably 19. He was maybe 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And he found this car out west and dragged it home. And within days, had it completely stripped to nothing. And I'll never forget this. He was painting the bottom of the car. It was off the frame. And he didn't have a rotisserie or a lift. Uh-huh. He had the car stacked up on probably 30 sets of steel wheels.
What?
So imagine having a wheel, you know, with no tire tipped over laying on the ground. Well, he had stacks of like 10 or 12 wheels high on each corner of the body. And that's what was holding the body up, and he was painting underneath it.
Whoa.
And I think he just jacked them up one at a time, you know, 6 inches at a time, and slipped another wheel in, like a big Jenga game, you know, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
And did it, pulled it off, and you know, media blasted the frame and rebuilt it and rebuilt the stock motor and put a cam in it and threw it all back together, dropped the front, you know, body back on. Beautiful, straight, black paint job.
Oh,
and
wow.
We'd go out cruising in the summertime in Chicago and that thing, and maybe a little street racing here and there, maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe a little something in Chinatown, who knows?
Yeah, maybe on the south side, you know. Skyway, you ever do that? Down by the Chicago Skyway? That's not safe. Don't do that.
No. I have not. I'm not sure if the statute of limitations has run out yet.
I remember running into a guy. In fact, I had my red 70 Riviera, and he had that black Monte Carlo, and we were both cruising, and we were at, I don't know, 79th and Stony Island, I think, at about 2 in the morning.
Oh, geez.
And there's guys down there with the burn barrels on the street corner and everything. Oh, really? It was bad. It is this early 90s, and this dude comes up to us, and he had a Nova, or we're trying to set up some street race against this Nova, and it's a good thing it never happened, because this was like a 9-second street car at the time. It was just some ridiculous car. But I went back and I was in college, and I was telling a friend of mine, he was like, "What'd you do last weekend?" I said, "Oh, yeah, my buddy Jim and I were on the south side hanging out, you know, in the middle of the night." And he was from that area, and he's like, "Man, you are lucky you lived." Because where we were describing, this was an area where some undesirables were hanging out at the time.
Oh, and, brother.
Two idiot kids from the suburbs with these shiny muscle cars in the middle of the night, you know, just... A recipe of disaster.
Yeah, boy, it doesn't get to looking any better than that for those guys, does it?
That's right. Yeah.
Good heavens.
So maybe that was part of the inspiration for the Monte Carlo as well. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. Could be. For sure.
Yeah. There's a few of those. The list of those kind of concepts is about 35 cars deep right now of things that are a little bit off the beaten path that I think would be really neat to build, you know, just if the right person would want it. Because unfortunately, I can't afford to build them all myself.
Yeah, I know. You need a generous benefactor to step in.
Right. Well, there's somebody that just thinks that stuff's cool.
Right. Yeah, sure, that's cool. Go ahead and build it. I'll finance it. Okay.
Yeah, right. Sure, that happens.
Yes, absolutely.
Probably to somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, sure as hell not to me. I said we got a Meekum auction coming up in Chicago, coming in October. That should be pretty interesting. A lot of cool things coming through there, typically.
Yes, I saw the preliminary on that one. I think I see a Copo Chevelle, like a 69?
Yes, yes. I got that email the other day.
Yeah,
about
a red one, and that looks like an awesome car. Man. Mm-hmm. You going to that one?
I want to. I think I'm going to try to. You going to go? Come on up here for it.
I probably should. I think that's October 8th and 9th, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
October 6th through the 8th.
6th through the 8th, yeah. Yeah. I'll have to see. That would be a good one to go to. The week after, I think, we're doing another season of Muscle Car the week, that whole week.
Oh, I see.
So I'll be away from the desk, but maybe the weekend before.
Yeah, when you got SEMA coming up, too, it's comes up the end of October, right?
Yeah, actually, beginning of November. This is my 20th SEMA in a row.
Wow, outstanding. Good for you guys.
Yeah, I don't look that old. It's pretty amazing.
You got it at the right time, man.
Yeah, I started doing SEMA 5 years before I was born. And
very cool.
Yeah, the SEMA show is something that I've done more than anything I've done in my life, believe it or not. I've never done 20 years solid of any event or any official thing, you know. I haven't. It just dawned on me the other day. I was like, wow, that's a long time I've been going to this show. Hopefully I figure it out one of these days.
But yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys do all right out there. I like what you put out on the website.
We have a new spin for this year because kind of it is the 20th anniversary. Trying to do something a little bit different. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, so I don't want to release details yet, but keep an eye on the site. Because if we do, it will be highly beneficial to the guys and gals at home that actually buy and use the parts, you know, because the crapper about SEMA is that you can't get in unless you're in the industry.
And
the people that actually buy the stuff, you know, they only get to see it through schlubs like me that shoot the video or do the stories. And we're trying to change a little bit of that. So we'll keep you posted, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm intrigued.
From the comfort of your easy chair.
Uh-huh. I like that.
Yeah, right. And then the other idea that I had, and I'll run this past you, I don't know if it's a good one or not, but when I was visiting my mom the other day, part of my mission was to find the old family slides, right? Because from the 60s through probably the early 80s, my parents shot pictures on slide film.
Okay.
As did many, many people. That was the thing to do was, you know, you shoot the slides and you have a slideshow and bore everybody by showing the pictures on the screen, you know. And the problem with that is that most people would watch them once and then they'd go in a box and you'd never see them again.
Right.
And I vividly remember my dad had a 62 Galaxy that he bought new. It's not the car that I have today. His was a white two-door hardtop with a maroon or a red interior.
Ooh.
And to this day, the only two pictures I know of that car were from June of 1962 and they're slides. And I found them, which was pretty cool.
Very cool.
So anyway, I'm gonna start transferring some of the, today there's scanning services where you could take a whole box of slides, you know, a couple hundred of them, you send them somewhere and they scan them all and then email you back, you know, scans, and then you can actually share them and everything else.
Right.
But while going through these slides, I found a picture of myself from the early 80s in my old bedroom building a model kit of some sort.
Yeah.
And I posted that on my personal Facebook page. I don't know if you saw that picture yesterday.
I did see that. You commented. Absolutely.
Because you said, I reminded you of blowing up all your old models.
Oh, I blew up every damn one I ever built. Firecrackers, lighter fluid, you name it. I did it.
Yeah, and I melted a few of them because I was trying to get like a crash look, you know.
Right.
So I remember heating a few up and melting them. But But I posted that picture on the Facebook page, and there was like 100 people that thought that was cool, you know, that liked it. And I thought, maybe we should do a model car contest.
Ah.
Because they don't, I'm sure there's a couple out there, and I'm, you know, I know, you know, the kids today, you know, they're not really into this stuff that much, but I think if they had more exposure to it and they saw the benefit of it, I think they would dig it. So I know when I was a kid, I used to enter a model car contest at Hill's Hobby Shop in Parkridge, Illinois.
Okay.
And part of the gas of doing that was seeing your model car on display in the storefront window.
Mm-hmm.
Because to enter, you brought the car in and they put them on display for a month or something, and then they judged them, and you know, there you go.
Right.
But you were kind of a hero, you know. Here you're a kid, and you could point to anybody and say, "Hey, that's my stuff in the window there," you know.
Yeah, that was a big deal back then. Absolutely,
it was. And I'm thinking now, I'm developing a concept, but maybe we do a model car contest where maybe on the website we provide some links to be able to buy some kits, maybe a link to a couple videos on how to build one if you never have, or some tips, and you know, maybe a link to some paints and stuff. And then cool. Maybe do a local version where people can build a car and bring it somewhere in person. And in the town of Red Bud, Illinois, where our shop is, it's a very car-friendly town. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure we could probably get several of the local businesses to host storefront window space, you know, to have these things on display. And then maybe there's an online component, too, where people can send in photographs of whatever they build from anywhere in the world. And we do those on the website. And then the winners, you know, the local kid winners, we do some interviews with them or something, do some via TV, television, we get them some prizes or whatever.
Right.
And also include a class for adults, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. As I'm sit here in the palatial cue ball studio, I'm looking right at my MPC model kit of a 67 GTO still in the box. Just waiting for an excuse to build it. I think you just gave me one.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, one of the things I was, when I posted that picture of myself at 12 years old or whatever, building this model kit in my bedroom, you know, I should have named the model kit, you know, Chick Repellent. because I think in reality that's kind of what it was. You know, you kind of kept it on the down low that you were building model kits in your bedroom all the time. But I think it was far more common. You know, I think a lot of people really liked them, and it's a way to have some craftsmanship and to learn some techniques on how to build stuff and paint things. And another guy had commented that he vividly remembers spilling orange paint all over his parents' carpet. You know, I had a couple similar stories. But I think it'd be pretty popular. And I know, like, Walmart controls the universe. And I've heard they got away from stocking model kits in most of the stores because everything's video games and that kind of stuff. But also because the paints and the glue, you know, you do bad things with it. And they didn't want the liability. So, I don't know. It's just kind of something I think would be kind of neat.
It would be kind of neat. That's a great idea, as a matter of fact. I mean, I haven't built a model in probably 30 years, but probably more than
right.
that. But we need to get back into that. Because, I mean, you could do such a better job now. I'm a lot more patient than I was when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old doing this kind of thing.
Well, that's one of the ways I learned patience, I'm pretty sure, was building model kits, because you can't just spray paint the thing and start putting it together. You know, you got to walk away.
Yeah, it was hard for me to do that when I was a kid. It took me a long time to learn any kind of patience, and so I think maybe now I have it.
Yeah, if I can get the meat hooks to stop shaking long enough, you know, to hold the thing, maybe we can pull it off.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, one of the coolest things recently is a guy that I used to work with, Ed Zinke, who was publisher of CarCraft magazine, and we worked together at the magazine world. He's another Chicago native car guy. He has been building funny car kits for a few years. I don't know what the inspiration was, but he also collects old Hot Rod magazines. So he would build the funny car that was on the cover of like the June 1972 issue. And his display would be the car, and then he'd have the magazine cover behind it. so you could see the race car and then the model kit and the real thing together. And he's so good at it that right now, today, 50 of those are on display at the NHRA Museum in Pomona, California, in their own display.
Wow.
Funny cars and their Holy covers. Cow. Yeah, it's totally cool. So maybe we'll get Eddie on board to try and figure out how to promote our little model car contest, because he's a really good guy and a good proponent of this kind of stuff.
Sure.
So maybe we'll get the ball rolling on the website again. And to me, this seems like an off-season thing to do, you know, wintertime. You're stuck inside, you know, what else are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, man, you're kind of lighting a fire under me now. I got to get this model built.
You know, gold looks good with a black vinyl top, maybe.
I've heard that. Except it rusts up a little too much. Maybe I'll keep it all metal.
All right, man. Well, listen, thanks as always for the time, and definitely keep us posted on the GTO saga on the website. I know I certainly have a lot of forum updates to do on all the car projects that I'm lagging behind, but I'll send out an email when those are updated so that people can follow along, and hopefully you get your pistons.
Hope so, too. Thanks. Appreciate it. I'll be getting on that guy soon about that.
Well, again, Mike, it's always a pleasure, and we will chat with you next time on VA Radio.
Sounds good.